Juan Soto gets his first Yankees walk-off as New York takes down the Boston Red Sox, while Jackson Churio with the Milwaukee Brewers sets an MLB record in his debut season. We'll break all that down and more on this episode of First Pitch. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Friday the 13th of September. It's a spooky season over here. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Christian Rau. You can follow him on Twitter at Christian S. Rau, R-A-U-H. And Christian, not a full slate of games yesterday, but still some really interesting stories to talk about, as a lot of people typically like to do when these two teams play. We're going to start with the New York Yankees taking on the Boston Red Sox. Weekend series here started on Thursday. Final in 10 innings, 2-1, thanks to Juan Soto doing this.
On a 2-2. Grounds one through into center field. Here comes Birdie. Rafaela's throw, not in time. Juan Soto's first walk-off hit as a Yankee comes against the Red Sox.
Want to give credit there on the call. He obviously gives the particulars of the call, recaps first walk-off for the Yankees, and then just lays out and lets you listen to the crowd noise. That's always a good sign of a great commentator there. So with this, now the Yankees are two games up in the AL East. They're obviously one of the first two teams that can clinch a postseason spot as of this weekend. Both the Guardians and the Yankees can officially clinch being in the postseason. I think here's my question here. Is this probably the last Yankees walk-off for Juan Soto, or do we think he's going to be back in 2025?
Yeah, I know that's an interesting question. Will we see it happen? I think the Yankees are not going to be afraid to spend money on Juan Soto, especially what you're seeing in the past here. But I think it's wild that we waited all the way till September to see his first walk-off for the Yankees. But what a perfect timing to do it against the Boston Red Sox, Lindsey. A rivalry that needs to be rekindled, because we didn't get that hype like we normally do with the Yankees and the Red Sox stepping up, knowing that they're playing this weekend. If it wasn't for, you know, half the league having an off day on Thursday, I don't know if many people will be talking about this game as much as you think, because there are a lot of good series coming up this weekend that we're going to talk about at the end of the show. And that shouldn't be the case when we're talking about Yankees Red Sox. So something like this, where Juan Soto going to be the biggest free agent in 2020 in the offseason here, heading into 2025, does something against your biggest rival. Mm-hmm. It's huge. So yeah, I don't think, if I had to say, I think we will see more walk-offs from Juan Soto as a New York Yankee, but I don't know if that'll happen in 2025, but I think you'll get at least one more this season, in the postseason.
Ooh, right.
Look at that.
I am at the point where I think the Yankees are going to do everything possible to re-sign him, simply because if you look at this lineup, you have, obviously, Aaron Judge is Aaron Judge. It's a 1.136 OPS. He's batting .319. He's probably the AL MVP, all this stuff. And then after him, Soto's batting .289 with a .995 OPS. I feel like he's probably going to get to one dot by the end of the year. After that, you only have three guys who are in the sevens on OPS. One of them was Jazz Chisholm, who didn't join the team until the trade deadline. Another one is Giancarlo Stanton, who is pretty much good to miss some games every single season because of injury, which is always frustrating. One day we'll do the "what if Giancarlo Stanton was healthy his entire career" conversation. And then the third one, catcher Austin Wells. We probably need to revisit the AL Rookie of the Year conversation and discuss, is Austin Wells going to chase down Colton Cowser and win Rookie of the Year? But it just feels like outside of that, you have a lot of guys who have underperformed. Anthony Volpe's batting just under .250. They've moved him to ninth. Anthony Rizzo, OPS of .617. Right. Even Gleyber Torres, who's leading off right now, is batting only .250 with a .693 OPS. And there's been a little bit of injury stuff there too, but it just feels like they don't have enough consistent offensive performance outside of Aaron Judge to let Juan Soto walk. I fully expect this to be a Mets-Yankees battle. There is some rumors that the Nationals are gearing up to make a run at Soto, which is weird because they wouldn't pay him enough when he was there. But I guess now he would, it's easier to spend now when he better fits the competitive window. And the competitive window is open because you got a lot of pieces when you traded him away, which is kind of funny. But if it's those three teams, I think it's going to be really interesting. Do we think he makes $500 million in his contract?
Yes. Yeah, I do. I think he's going to just get there, $500 million. I think that's safe to say that he's going to get absolutely paid. And I think that happens. He gets the answer before. I don't know. Do you think we get it at winter meetings? Or do you think we get it beforehand? So that's what, December 10th? What do you think we get it before that time? That seems like a pretty reasonable time for it to happen.
It would be nice. I don't know if it if we get it done by then. I'm trying to figure out. He is a Scott Boras guy, so it makes me feel like it's not going to be incredibly fast. But I do think it'll be similar timing to Shohei Ohtani last year, where it's like, we all kind of know nothing's going to happen until this Juan Soto deal gets figured out. And so it's going to be the biggest priority. And if you remember at the winter meetings, different managers were talking about like, oh, I can't talk about our visits with him and all of that. And then Dave Roberts is like, I don't care. I'll talk all about it. And then they signed him, but it came after the winter meeting. So I kind of feel like it's probably going to be, I think it'll be before the end of the year. I don't think it'll be done by the winter meetings, which is a bummer because obviously we're going to be at the winter meetings and I'd love to be able to talk about this with a bunch of people at the winter meetings. But I guess now you have more flexibility to talk with player with media members about can their team sign Juan Soto. So that'll be interesting.
The biggest thing here that I have is if Juan Soto does re-sign with the Yankees, Lindsay, does that mean that John Soto signs with the Giants? Like, does that happen?
I know you were dad. And so like the dad just... Anyway,
that's what we're doing. Okay,
that's what we're doing. All right, moving on from a 25-year-old to a 20-year-old. The Milwaukee Brewers took down the San Francisco Giants 3-0 in the late game last night, highlighted by leadoff hitter Jackson Churio, who went 1-for-4 with a homer. That was his 20th home run of the season. In retrospect, that would have been a great second video to have for the show, but that solidified not only a 2020 season for Jackson Churio, but the first major leaguer to ever have a 2020 season before his 21st birthday. Now, there is a little bit of a caveat here. Two other players had 2020 campaigns in their age 20 seasons. Veda Pinson of the Reds in 1959 and Mike Trout in 2012. Like, for instance, Trout hit that 20th home run on his 21st birthday. Jackson Churio doesn't turn 21 until next March, so he is the youngest player to ever have 2020. He got that 20th base on August 31st. He got that, obviously he got that home run last night. He's been sitting on 19 for 10 days. He had a, September 3rd was the 19th home run. This was only the 76th time a right-handed hitter has ever homered to right field at Oracle Park. So it's not like this was some sort of cheap home run. He had to work to get this one. How, I guess, what is the ceiling for Jackson Churio? Are we thinking that Jackson Churio can one day be a potential MVP candidate? Are we looking at the next great all-star? Are we looking at one of the five best players in baseball in 3 years? Where do you think we should properly put Jackson Churio 3 years from now?
I think he has MVP material. I think that's a fair assessment. I think a safe bet would say, you know, top five player in baseball in a few seasons. I mean, look what he's done in the second half of the season. He started off a little slow, but I mean, come on, 20-year-old starting in the major leagues. It's kind of expected, but pre-All-Star game, he had 85 games in, 678 OPS. I mean, it's not terrible. That's not terrible, but it's a little bit slow. But since then, 47 games since after the All-Star break, Lindsay, he's got 11 of those home runs in only the last 47 games to get to 20. He has a 956 OPS, 314, 371, 585 slug. if he continues on this stretch, he's made a lot of adjustments since July. I think that he's going to have a killer season in 2025 and beyond. I would not be shocked to see him, if he continues this pace. I mean, it's not, I don't think it's outrageous to say that he probably hits close to 35 next year.
I do want to remind folks, he signed a contract in the offseason before he ever debuted. 8 years, $82 million. So average salary of $10.25 million. He's not making that this year. He's only making two and a quarter this year. He doesn't go up to, he doesn't actually break that $10 million until 2029. His age 25 season, he'll be making $15 million then. And there's two club options on this deal for $25 million a piece for his age 28 and 29 seasons. So he could make $132 million before his age 30 season and still hit free agency, while the Brewers could have him for 10 years at $132 million. Is this the rare kind of contract, early contract, that almost feels like it's a win-win for each team? Or is this something where if he didn't sign it and he potentially hit free agency for his age 26 season, he would have made more?
He would have probably made more. I think that's the case. But I think it is a win-win because you're getting a guy not have to worry about contract. Now, I think he could have made more money. So if you're thinking in the Cheerio case, maybe you're not expecting putting him in the win column. But I don't know if you can consider this rare anymore, Lindsay, because, I mean, your Atlanta Braves have done this with some of the, you know, some of the stars on their team, with Ronald Acuña Jr., Ozzie Albies, Michael Harris, and so on. So I think that they helped to develop this trend to lock up some of these younger guys even before they've taken some at-bats. That's pretty historic. But
yeah,
regardless, I think that this is going to be a huge thing. I hope Milwaukee takes advantage of Cheerio having a pretty decent, you know, annual average value for over the next few seasons and builds around him. Can you imagine a guy like Anthony Santander also in the outfield with him in Milwaukee, you know, and actually helping protect Jackson Cheerio at the plate as well? I mean, that could be really fun. There could be a lot of really fun conversations this offseason.
Yeah. Being able to build around a guy who's only hitting you on the tax for 10.25 is definitely helpful. Obviously, you have to figure out what's going on with Christian Yelich, if he's going to be back next year and what kind of condition he'll be in. But it does feel like you can capitalize on the affordability of on the extra delta between what this kind of guy would cost in free agency and what you're going to be paying him. And then that pre-debut contract. I do think there's a case where if he doesn't sign the pre-debut contract, maybe we don't see him to open the year. I do think that's a little bit of a thing there. Would they probably have worked it out where he didn't hit free agency until 27 or 28. It's possible. We don't know. But either way, I do think the deal got him some good money. He has a chance to get another big contract in his career. They get some cost certainty and they get some discounted production, I think, for him. But either way, amazing year. I was actually at that press conference at the winter meetings when he discussed it. And he talked about, like, obviously all this stuff is great. Like, his goal is just he wanted to get in the majors and prove that he belonged. And like, buddy, you belong. you absolutely belong. And we love it. And another guy who proved that he belonged last night, Kumar Rocker, debuted for the Texas Rangers last night. The Rangers were taking on the Seattle Mariners in Seattle. They won 5-4. Rocker didn't get a decision. He only pitched four innings, but three hits, one run, two walks, to seven strikeouts. And some of what he did was, frankly, kind of historic. Since the pitch tracking era started in 2008, his 17 whiffs is the most for a Rangers pitcher in their major league debut. So again, since 2008, when pitch tracking started, and it's tied with Max Scherzer for most in four innings this season. Scherzer had a 17 whiff game in four innings this year. 13 of those 17 whiffs came off of his slider. It's the third most whiffs on a single pitch in a player's debut in that same pitch tracking era, so since 2008. And I saw one of the really great pitching analysts on Twitter, Lance Brodowski of Marquee and of Substack, talk about it's possible that Kumar Rocker's slider is already a top five slider in all of baseball in his debut. So one, that was just awesome. Go watch some of the clips of that. But then Jacob deGrom returns tonight and Max Scherzer pitches on Saturday. Can you imagine being at a draft party for the New York Mets in 2021, in July 2021, and somebody says, hey, that rocker kid you got, 3 years from now, he's going to pitch the first game of a series with DeGrom behind him and then Max Scherzer after DeGrom. And you're going to say, oh, cool, we signed Max Scherzer. It turns out they're all going to do this for the Rangers and not for the Mets.
Oh, man, could you imagine? Yeah, I don't know. What would you be more upset about? Probably the DeGrom conversation, if you heard that 3 years ago, for sure. But you took my answer here, or really my question. I was going to ask you, what do you think about that slider? You think it's one of the best in baseball already? But watching just, even if you just watch the highlights of Rocker's debut yesterday, you can tell that slider is going to be special. It's really exciting to watch that. But yeah, we're getting some really fun pitching this weekend from the Rangers. Jacob deGrom finally making his debut this season. Of course, I know they're out of it, Lindsay, but that doesn't change the fact that we're getting one of the best pitchers in the last, I dare say, 20 years back on the mound. And that's huge, because Jacob deGrom is such a fun pitcher to watch. And I really hope that he has a healthy return. I don't care if he goes 5-6 innings. I don't care. I just want to see him healthy. I want to see him get a couple punchies, and I want to see him get excited. And if they win the game, that's also great too, because the Rangers need a nice little momentum boost heading into the offseason, because they have a lot of money on the books. And if they don't have that momentum going into 2025, I could see them maybe making some drastic changes that I don't think that they should, but I could see them maybe making something a little too early, maybe getting a little nervous, if you will, heading into the offseason. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's not all great news for the Rangers. Corey Seager's having surgery. He is out for the rest of the year. But this is a really interesting offseason for the Rangers, because Scherzer is a free agent, right? Him pitching this year, he waived his opt-out as part of the trade to the Rangers. Most of his salary was paid by the Mets this year. They got what looks to be a fifth outfielder and Luis Angel Acuna, who's stuck in their minor league system right now. But DeGrom is back. Obviously, Seager and Semien, all those guys are back. Nathan Eovaldi is six innings away from his option vesting, becomes a player option for next year. But Andrew Heaney is a free agent. They've got, important guys. Reliever Kirby Yates is a free agent. Reliever Jose Leclerc is a free agent. They've got some decisions to make here. Do they bring back Scherzer? Does he come back for less than $43 million? You had a great suggestion before we hit record. Maybe he pitches what could be his final season back in Detroit with that young core, who is still pushing for the postseason. Doesn't look like they're going to make it, but they're making a late season push here with all their youth. Getting a good DeGrom for two or three starts to close out the year, I think, is going to go a long way towards being able to see the competitiveness this year, next year, of this rotation. When you can take a Kumar Rocker, maybe Cody Bradford takes another step up. You have this young core with a Josh Young, a Josh Smith, who's going to be playing a lot of shortstop coming up. And I can really see, it feels like it's an older team, but I can really see how this offseason can set them up to go make another World Series run if some things break right, including DeGrom start tonight.
Yeah, I want to hear, one of the biggest things I want to hear this offseason for the Texas Rangers is Jack Leiter went to Driveline. That's one of the things I want to hear.
Yes.
And I think that would be
I didn't even mention him.
Yeah, and if he goes there, I think we have a whole different conversation about this pitching rotation, because there's some questions about him, but we know the potential's there, right? And having those two Vandy boys maybe in the middle of your rotation to start 2025, that could be huge as well, regardless of who's leaving.
Real quick cleanup for me. Eovaldi is four innings away from his option vesting, not six. That's on me. Okay, so I want to get to a quick pitch real quick. A couple of fun things to talk about. The first one, did you hear this story about the Twins minor leaguer? This is absolutely wild. All right, so Derek Bender was taken. He's a catcher out of Coastal Carolina. Was taken in the sixth round by the Twins in this year's draft. He's playing for the Fort Myers Mighty Muscle, single-A affiliate of the Twins, It's a postseason game against the Lakeland Flying Tigers, affiliate of the Detroit Tigers. And apparently, second game of a doubleheader, he was telling multiple hitters for Lakeland what pitches were coming. Lakeland scores 4 runs in that inning, in the second inning, wins the game 6-0. Mighty Muscles are eliminated. They had a 6-game lead 3 weeks ago. So he got them eliminated from the thing. Fort Myers coaches were told by Lakeland's coaches after the game that he was doing that. Apparently, the Tigers players didn't do anything. Like they weren't asking him for it. They weren't trying to get anything. He told teammates he wanted the season to be over. He was tired of playing. He played a whole college season and then he went in the minors. He did all of that. The Twins have cut him. The Twins have released him. So obviously they're going to kind of have to eat that money. They signed him for $297,500, just below slot for pick 188. He'll get to keep all of that bonus. But at this point, do you think anybody picks him up in the minors and gives him another shot?
No, he's lucky if the Long Island Ducks give him a shot. I mean, honestly, no, I don't think that. I think he's done. I think him wanting to, stop playing baseball early, I think he got his wish granted. I think it just might be early, might be permanent for him. That's a crazy way to wanting to end. You work your entire life, and I don't know his life goals, obviously, but he played college baseball and he made it to the leagues. So you have to expect or maybe assume that, one of his dreams was to play in the major leagues. And he just ruined that because he wanted to have a couple extra weeks of summer vacation. That's wild. That's wild. And I know that, the college season is taxing and then going right into the minor leagues. That can't be an easy transition. It can't be. But that's just wild, Lindsay. I can't imagine that. And we don't hear that too often for a very good reason. But yeah, when this story came out last night, reading it, we were talking in the chats offline. I was absolutely baffled.
Yeah. I mean, if nothing else, to me, just feign an injury, but like your season can be done. Like you can say, hey, like my shoulder is just really, it's a shoulder. Listen, nobody knows how shoulders work. Okay. It's just, if you say your shoulder's sore, there's probably going to be some inflammation because you've thrown a baseball and that's not a really that natural thing to do. I mean, you can go and you can say, hey guys, I'm hurt. They can check you out. You won't have to play the rest of the year, right? It just, bro, what are we doing here? This, I can't think of the last time I saw something this egregious. And to me, granted, I never played in the minors. I'm not a former professional baseball player, but I can't imagine there's many things worse to a professional baseball player than what Derek Bender did. And I just, blows my mind. Absolutely blows my mind.
As a catcher too, like one of your biggest things is to help control the game. Now that's not obviously a thing in the minor leagues. I mean, more things go towards coaching, but regardless, that position, I think it's even worse knowing that he's a catcher and he did that because you have this
expectation. Your pitcher's trusting you.
Right. You have this expectation, not even just pitchers, the entire clubhouse. You have this leadership role as the catcher. So yeah, I don't think we'll see him on a major league club in an organization ever again. I think his career is over.
Yeah, wild story. Okay, let's talk about Luis Arraez for a minute because he's in the middle of an absurd streak right now. He has got 124 plate appearances without striking out. His last strikeout was August 10th. It is now September 13th. 46-game span. He's played 42 games since the All-Star break of the 46 the team has had. He has 2 strikeouts since the All-Star break. The next closest qualified player, which I believe is like 3.1 at-bats per team game, the next closest qualified player has 15. Do we underappreciate how good Luis Arraez is because he's not hitting for power? He's just hitting a lot of singles. He doesn't have a lot of defensive value, but are we underrating how good Luis Arraez is?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And especially cause he's doing it in a Padres jersey too. I think that's really fun, by the way, because he's doing things that the greatest Padre of all time is kind of doing, right? It's kind of like a Tony Gwynn style with Luis Ariz here. You know, Dave Adler put out a really interesting piece on MLB.com yesterday about this Luis Ariz whole streak that's going on. And I recommend that you go ahead and take a look at it. It's on the front page of MLB.com this morning. But he breaks down the entire, you know, how he's doing it. And one of the things I thought was really interesting is he showed the lowest two strike whiff rate so far in 2024. And Luis Ariz changes his swing. He has a completely shorter swing when he's protecting the plate of two strikes, which is one of the reasons why he's not striking out. But that lowest two strike whiff rate, only 5.5% for Luis Ariz. Second place is Stephen Kwan, almost doubled, 9.7%. He is doing things that no one in the league is getting remotely close to. And the fact that we're talking about this now, Lindsay, and the fact that it's Friday the 13th, he will probably strike out today.
That's how that always works. What I thought was really great in that piece is kind of how he broke down specifically kind of how Luis Ariz approaches an at-bat, because he almost never swings at the first pitch. 83% of the time in this streak, he's taken the first pitch. But then after that, he gets a lot more aggressive. And there's some good examples in here, like George Kirby of the Mariners gets him 97 miles an hour on the inside edge of the plate. The next pitch is another 97 mile an hour fastball. He rips it for a line drive to right field. Like the approach, he takes the first pitch so he can see in person what your stuff looks like. And then from there, he gets incredibly aggressive. And then he shortens the swing and gets even more aggressive with, like, you know, in that final pitch there. So really interesting. I do think that a lot of people discount what he does. And I'm one of the people who have always done this because of he's not hitting for power, right? You think about Tony Gwynn. That's the big comparison you want to make here because he's now with the Padres. And Tony Gwynn was more of a slugger than Luis Ariz is. But I think the difference here and there is, and this kind of comes back to our conversation we had on yesterday's Braves Today show about Chipper Jones's comments about how hitting's changed. Hitting is so much harder now that Luis Ariz has to trade power for contact. Whereas in Tony Gwynn's day, you could still have great contact ability, and Tony Gwynn was one of the best contact hitters of that generation, but also be able to hit for power because the raw stuff you were facing wasn't nearly as good. So I do think that's one of the reasons people underrate him. And then the other reason is he's been traded a few times. He was with the Twins. Then he went to the Marlins and now the Padres. And so I think there's a little bit of a sense of, well, his own teams don't even necessarily want him. And I think that's rather, it's instead maybe how he's valued in the game. And some organizations don't put a premium on that type of player. I can tell you from my time covering the Atlanta Braves, they focus on guys who can put up large exit velocities, who get lots of hard hit balls and barrels and can hit the ball hard. And Luis Ariz's profile is not something that they are actively looking for at the major league level because it's just so hard to string together multiple hits to get a run when you can instead of trying to get four consecutive hits to bring in a run, it's more reliable for them, in their opinion, and a lot of teams' opinions, to have one of those four guys hit a home run. So I kind of see why he's been traded so much because not every team values him the same.
No, that's a really good point, and I agree with it, but at the same time, I think that he is a very valuable asset to the team, and I know you're not saying that, but I love it. I personally love that kind of that play, and I want to see more of it. I know that's not where the league is heading, but I personally love watching guys that battle at the plate, get those singles. If you get a double from them, great. I think we might have a different conversation about Ariz if his defense was better too. I think that also comes in the play.
Yeah. He doesn't look great at second base to the point where he's played a lot of first base or DH'd. And that's just kind of one of those things where I think if he was a decent defender, even a decent defender, right, where you weren't worried about playing him every day at second base, I think he maybe would be viewed a little bit differently. But he played a lot of second in Miami. He's played a lot of first base and DH with the Padres, and that's kind of where he was with the Twins as well. So there is that. All right. I want to wrap it up with a kind of look at the weekend. We've got a lot of really interesting series coming up, and that doesn't even count the Yankees and the Red Sox. I think most of the intriguing matchups are in the National League. Let's kind of go through a couple of these and give some thoughts as to what we think is going to happen here. Mets at Phillies, to me, is really interesting because the Mets are trying to hold off the Braves for that final wild card spot. And the Mets have to take on Philly at the same time Atlanta's taking on the Dodgers. And so kind of curious what's going to happen here. Who's going to come out of this on top? Right now, the Mets are leading the division. But tonight's matchup, Jose Quintana versus Aaron Nola, Mets versus Phillies, definitely going to be a must watch.
Yeah, I am really looking forward to this series. If the Mets can do something this weekend against the Philadelphia Phillies, the Braves are in trouble, especially because the Braves have yet to win a game this season against the Dodgers. Those two series, I think, are the ones that I'm really paying attention to the most because I think they have the most to lose between the two teams. So I will be glued to the Mets-Phillies game and the Dodgers-Braves games tonight and this weekend. The Braves game's on Apple TV, so unfortunately, I will be watching Apple TV as well. But the plus side of that, Lindsay, you told me about it. You can change the broadcast details and listen to the radio on Apple TV, which is a plus side for me.
Yes, you can change. You can listen to Apple TV's call or either team's radio call on Apple TV. I love that feature. I wish MLB... MLB.TV has it if you're watching out of market game. I wish everybody did this. I think it's fantastic. But yeah, the Braves are 0-3 with a negative 14 run differential against LA in their three games this year. We'll see what happens. A lot of possible weather concerns in this one. The hurricane that hit down in the Gulf Coast is going to bring a lot of rain over the weekend to the Atlanta area. And if these two teams can't get some of these games in, not a lot of convenient makeup places between now and the end of the season, so we'll see what happens. I think the other big interesting matchup in the National League, Brewers at Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks have gotten some of their hurt guys back. They have Christian Walker is back. Kettle Marte is back. But it feels like those guys aren't quite hitting like they were before the injuries. And then meanwhile, Milwaukee is rocking with one of the better records in the National League. I mean, 84-62. They're three games behind the Dodgers and four games behind the Phillies, so third best record in the National League, and they're just rolling right now. Nine game lead in that division. I don't know exactly when they can clinch the division, but I feel like it could be as soon as next week. But I'd be curious to see, can Arizona maintain their wild card spot with this tough matchup? Because some people have speculated, I think you were one of them, both the Mets and Braves could make the postseason if Arizona falls off. They only have a two-game lead, although they are ahead of the Padres right now.
Yeah, I still have a lot of questions about the Diamondbacks rotation. Maybe we'll get some answers against a quality opponent this weekend. But right now, yeah, I could totally still see a scenario where the Diamondbacks are sitting on the couch and both the Mets and the Braves are playing playoff baseball in October.
This has been First Pitch for Friday, September 13th. Enjoy the weekend. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, leave a comment down below, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell so you know when we drop a new episode. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.